Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. How are you? And good evening to everyone out there. We have more news from Washington and lots of practical information for our veterans and their families. You know, this is PTSD Awareness Month, and to follow our interview with Rebecca Winkler last week, we will talk more about PTSD and provide information to help our veterans. For those of you who have missed our shows the past 2 weeks, I would recommend and highly recommend that you listen to our recorded shows on our BBS Radio website at bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Last week, our guest was Rebecca Winkler, whose son Drew was an Iraq War veteran who died by suicide after suffering from severe PTSD for 5 years. She is also the co-founder of the Winkler Wish Foundation. The week before that, our guest was veteran Matt Williams, a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan, and now a singer and songwriter. For those of you who heard his show, you hear his story. And he's done quite well. So listen to those shows and other shows. And again, we're focusing on PTSD tonight as well as next week and the effects that PTSD has on our veterans and our families, which we're going to go into in a little bit during the show. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. And as far as some of our previous shows, I'd also highlight for our listeners, when you're looking at our archive shows, look at the May 1st, 2017 show. Our guest that evening was Vietnam War veteran Brian Wizard, and it was a great interview, and Brian talked about his own experiences with PTSD and how he has his life has been since his service in the Vietnam War. For those of you who are our first-time listeners, please know that this show is not only a news show, it's also a call-in show, so you can call us anytime during the show. Here's the number. You want to grab a pen and paper. The call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. I'd like to also recognize and thank the sponsors of tonight's show, which include the American Legion's John F. Murphy Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, on the beautiful southwest coast of Florida. Also, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and, of course, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases and military personnel actions. Back to you, Rick.
Thank you, David. And, again, that phone number is 1-888-627-6008. It would be great to hear from our vets. And how they're coping with PTSD. I'd like to hear that how the VA has been dealing with you, either on the benefit side or the compensation side, the health side. You know, what's the VA been doing for you or not doing for you? And also our families. You know, David, you and I have talked so often about how, you know, PTSD really is a family issue. So I'd love to hear from some of our families and see how they're coping with PTSD. But before we get further into the PTSD, there is some news from Washington. This past week, the VA Secretary Shulkin announced that the VA would reverse course on its earlier budget proposal to cut individual unemployability benefits for hundreds of thousands of elderly veterans who have reached the age of 62. What great news. That was a terrible VA idea that we had discussed and opposed on this show in prior weeks, and which the major veterans groups around the country had also opposed. So it's obviously good news for veterans that the VA has backed down, but the episode is a stark reminder. And, you know, David, you and I, whether we're doing it on air or we're doing it around town or in the shopping malls, wherever we see veterans, that the veterans must be constantly vigilant and watching what the VA bureaucrats and members of Congress are up to. You know, regarding that IU, I can't tell you, just driving around, you know, and seeing veterans who were collecting money for something, and I go up and approach them about this, and they would look at me and go, what are you talking about? Never even heard of that. So it is so important for you veterans to stay vigilant and watch what these bureaucrats are doing. You know, under the current law, disabled veterans can receive 100% rating if their service-connected disabilities limit their abilities to the extent that they are unable to work. The proposal, if it had been incorporated into the final budget, would have halted the VA payment of IU benefits as soon as veterans reach the age of 62, the youngest age upon which a person can receive Social Security retirement. However, Social Security retirement is based on how much a person has earned during his or her time working. And a person who has been unable to work has therefore paid less into the system and will receive less than if he or she had been working. How ironic. Don't get the logic there, that they were proposing. We also know that the VA is notorious for issuing low ratings. Just ask our clients. Finally, recipients of IU benefits are some of the most severely disabled veterans in the country, with disability ratings ranging from 60 to 90%. The VA's proposed budget would have also affected many surviving spouses and children of veterans. Under current law, if a veteran is rated 100% disabled for 10 years immediately preceding his/her death, the surviving spouse or minor child is eligible for dependency and indemnity compensation, DIC benefits. If the proposed idea had passed and a veteran's IU benefits were cut, the surviving spouse or minor child would not be eligible for DIC benefits when the veteran dies, unless they qualify under another basis, such as if the death is service-connected. So it is great news for our veterans that the VA responded to the public outcry and withdrew that terrible idea. Over to you, David.
Yes, thank you. And another important proposed bill in Washington, we've discussed in prior shows, but it merits further mention. Just last week, when the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee was holding a hearing over the budget, the VA reiterated the need for this legislation. The Senate has not yet acted on it. That's why we're still going to discuss it, at least briefly tonight. And that legislation is called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. The legislation, which its numerical designations are S-1024 in the Senate and H.R. 2288, that legislation is really more for the convenience of the VA, as I see it. It will make it easier for the VA to deny appeals rather than actually helping veterans. It has already passed the House of Representatives, actually by an overwhelming margin, and it's now awaiting action in the U.S. Senate. As I said before, this legislation will make the system worse for the veterans. The alleged driver for all this is that the appeals system is backlogged, you know, with close to 500,000 claims, and it can take 3 to 4 years at the first stage of appeals and another 3 to 5 years or even longer at the next step, which is to go to the Board of Veterans Appeals. Well, this legislation would remove the VA's duty to assist veterans after the initial denial of the claim, which is not a good thing. So obviously, the VA is trying to make things easier for the VA and not the veterans. The legislation also won't fix the long processing time for the current cases, which the VA calls legacy cases. Kind of a strange name. I'm not sure what legacy they're hoping to give, but that's what they call the appeal cases now that would be in existence before this legislation becomes law, if it ever does. Now, the effect of the legislation will also be to encourage or pressure veterans to waive their right to a hearing and waive the right to submit new evidence in exchange for getting on what the VA considers a faster track with the Board of Veterans Appeals. However, anyone familiar with the VA claims and appeals system, particularly appeals, will tell you that it seems like when the VA says fast track or faster track, you got to take that in the context of their history. where the VA seems to have two speeds, slow and then even slower than that, or even not even moving at all. But so when they say a faster track, I'll believe it when I see it. Now, the system clearly needs to be reformed. There's no doubt about it. But my view is this legislation will just replace one flawed system with another flawed system. The legislation, in my view, needs to be totally rewritten without the VA bureaucrats dictating the answers, because they're looking out for themselves. After all, the bureaucrats are the ones who have had literally decades to fix things, and they have not. So they can't be trusted to look out for their own, look out for the veterans, or really look out for their own interests. And sad to say, veterans can't entirely trust the major veterans groups. As I've talked about on prior shows, the largest veteran groups that's opposing this legislation is the Vietnam Veterans of America. We're hoping to have a guest from that organization on our show next week. But most of the other large veteran groups, and you know who they are, American Legion, VFW, and others, they basically agreed to support the legislation. They may have some qualms about it, but when it comes down to members of Congress asking them for a yes or a no, they're supporting it, which I think is a terrible thing. Now, what can you, the listeners, do? Well, you can contact your two U.S. senators. Every voter has two U.S. senators for their state. You can find their contact information on the website. Very easy to remember. It's Senate.gov. Senate.gov. And you can also contact not just your own two U.S. senators, but the chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, who's a Republican. You can contact the senior Democrat, what they call the ranking Democrat, and they have contact information right on the committee's website, which is veterans.senate.gov. And the chairman's page is veterans.senate.gov/chairman. And then the ranking Democrat is veterans.senate.gov/ranking-member. They call the senior Democrat the ranking member on the committee. So if the websites I've given you are too hard to remember, try this. Just go to senate.gov and look for the drop-down menu for the Veterans Affairs Committee, and you can take it from there. You can find the full list of committee members, all the members on the committee, contact them as well, and let them know your views. And again, the legislation is called, the full title is the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. Now, the Senate version is S-1024, and the version, which is virtually the same, there's just a few minor changes from the House, is H.R. 2288. The House passed it. It goes to the Senate, but the Senate has its own version, S-1024. All right, Rick, let's move on and get to our next topic for tonight, which is post-traumatic stress disorder awareness.
Great idea, David. You know, I know there are many resources on the Internet about PTSD, but let's start with this. David, what does the VA say about PTSD?
Well, I think that's a great question to find out what the VA's perspective is, and that's going to be largely a big source of what we're going to talk about tonight. It's not the only source, but the VA does have a lot of expertise about PTSD. According to the VA, post-traumatic stress disorder is a mental health problem that some people develop after experiencing or witnessing a life-threatening event like combat, a natural disaster, a serious car accident, sexual assault, and you can probably think of other very traumatic events. And it's to be expected that people are going to have upsetting memories. They're going to psychologically feel like they're on the edge. They're having trouble sleeping after traumatic events. And that's to be expected, and it may be difficult to do normal activities like going to work, going to school, or being around people. Most people after a traumatic event, they do start to feel better after a few weeks or months. But after that, if a person's still having symptoms, the VA's point is that the person may be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And for some people, this is particularly interesting, may not be obvious, is that post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms can start later on. In some cases, many years later, they can present themselves. And they may come and go over time, so the severity may not be constant. And that's because the symptoms may be triggered by other things that are happening.
You know, David, you yourself are a veteran, and you've shared some of your experiences. And I know one of the stories was your helicopter ride. But what factors affect who develops PTSD?
Well, I'm not sure where you were going with that. I had a number of helicopter rides, and I had some. I'm not sure where you're going with that, Hurley, but.
Throwing anyone. They're all pretty funny.
I'm not going to share my helicopter stories with our nationwide audience tonight. But in any event, according to the VA, PTSD can happen to anyone. It's not a sign of weakness. A number of factors can either increase the chance of someone having PTSD, many of which are really not, those factors not under a person's control. And I'll talk in more detail a little later in the show about some of those factors. But basically, having a very intense or long-lasting traumatic event or getting injured during the event can make it more likely that a person will develop PTSD, and it's more common after certain types of trauma, like combat, where the person is their life is in danger, or a serious personal assault of some type, whether it's a sexual assault or other type of personal assault. And I'll talk more about some of the personal factors which can affect whether a person will develop it. But what happens after the traumatic event is also extremely important, because other stressors in a person's life that's going on can make PTSD more likely, while social support can make it less likely. And I was doing some reading recently about how post-traumatic stress disorder, although it wasn't called PTSD back then, how it was treated in World War II. And back then, one of the approaches was to get people back in combat just as quickly as possible. Some people might say, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But when you think about the old analogy of if you're thrown off a horse, some people would say you got to get back on the horse very soon to kind of prevent the fear from settling in. And also, for another reason, at least with the PTSD, is that they found that the social support of being back in the military unit with the other soldiers, other Marines, et cetera, can be very helpful. Not always, though. And what was also interesting in my reading is that, after World War II, and there were many, many thousands of veterans that had, the combat stress, and back in that time frame, the treatment was different, and they would use some treatments that today would never be used. They would use, for extreme cases, like insulin shock therapy. One of our current clients from the Korean War era had that, where they're essentially putting the person into a coma. And another one, believe it or not, this was they would use lobotomies, back when lobotomies were considered par for the course for treating behavioral problems. They would do lobotomies on some veterans, and then that ended, by the early 50s. But treatment and the understanding of this mental illness have changed over time.
David, you and I probably deal with PTSD every day with our clients. And I can't think of a day that doesn't go by where I'm not dealing with this particular disorder. Why don't you share with us some of the symptoms of PTSD?
Well, according to the VA's research, and I give the VA a lot of credit because they're in the business of trying to help veterans, even though there may be a lot of cases where they've done a very poor job. But the VA says that these symptoms usually start soon after the traumatic event, but on the other hand, they may not appear until sometimes months or years later. They may come and go over the years. The VA believes that if the symptoms last longer than 4 weeks or cause a person great distress or interfere with their work or home, then the person might consider seeking a diagnosis if they have, you know, for PTSD or another mental condition. The VA says that there's 4 broad types of symptoms, but they may not actually be the same for everyone. Each person may experience symptoms in their own ways, and it's important to keep that in mind. Those 4 categories include the following. First, the symptom of reliving the event, also called re-experiencing the symptoms. The person may have bad memories or nightmares. They may feel like they're going through the event over and over again. Some people call that a flashback. The second category of symptoms is to avoid situations that remind them of the event. You might say that makes perfect sense if there's a situation that has caused the person a lot of trauma. Of course they would avoid it, but that's also a sign that they might. They may avoid talking or thinking about the event. A third category of symptoms is having, more negative beliefs and feelings. The way someone thinks about themselves or other people may change. They may feel guilt or shame. They may be no longer interested in activities they used to enjoy. They may believe that the world is dangerous. They can't trust anyone. You know, you hear the stories of the veterans that they go into a restaurant and they're in some public place and they always seat themselves in the corner with their back to the wall, and always looking for a way out in case there's some danger. They may feel very numb psychologically, find it hard to feel happy. And then a fourth category of symptoms, according to the VA, is a sense of feeling keyed up. What the VA says can be considered hyperarousal. They're very jittery. They're always on alert. They're always on lookout for danger, something I mentioned earlier. They may have trouble concentrating. A lot of them have trouble sleeping, which itself then creates other problems, other physical problems and other psychological problems. They may be prone to getting angry very suddenly, irritable, startle easily, and then also engage in other just unhealthy behavior, whether it's using drugs or alcohol excessively, driving carelessly or recklessly, just other dangerous behavior. So those are
David,
4 categories.
I'm sorry. Every so often, I have a veteran in my office, and we go through his disabilities. Some already might be service-connected, or we're exploring new potential disabilities as a result of the service. And, you know, I always throw out, you know, PTSD and explain it to them. And so many of them kind of get their back up a little bit, like, oh, no, I don't have PTSD. It never happened to me. And, you know, then I start to explain a little bit about PTSD. And then I ask the veteran, tell me something about your service. And it's amazing what you then hear from these veterans. So, you know, what are, for those veterans out there who haven't maybe filed a claim for PTSD and might be believing after our discussion tonight that maybe PTSD does apply to them, what are some of the other problems that people have with PTSD experience.
That's a good question. Some of the related problems, and the VA has done research on this, that people with PTSD have other problems like just a general feeling of hopelessness in their life, shame or despair, depression, anxiety, drinking and drug problems, physical symptoms, chronic pain. And then, of course, what's the impact? They have employment problems. We hear this from many of the veterans that we help. Also relationship problems, aside from employment. They have relationship problems, divorce, and just other issues related to that or stemming from that. And treatment for PTSD can help with those other issues as well, help people cope with those things. And one thing I'd like to digress just a little bit, because some of these behaviors that I just mentioned, like drinking or drug problems, you know, for veterans, it's not as if they wait till they separate from the military and now they're veterans. No. They may have been combat veterans, been through one or more tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're still on active duty. And they're experiencing these things, and they're either trying to cope with them themselves or perhaps with some sort of treatment. But meanwhile, some of these problems that I've mentioned, drinking or drug problems, these other symptoms I've mentioned of reckless behavior, it's pretty clear that those can result in problems within the military and get people kicked out for misconduct. So we see that, and those discharges, whether it's a court-martial for serious misconduct or just an administrative discharge, that can result in what a lot of people will call bad paper. It's basically referring to a characterization of service other than an honorable discharge. And certain types of characterization of discharge can result in the loss of VA benefits. So when people that are not familiar with that, people that have never been in the military, and they see all these homeless veterans out there, and they're wondering, with the government spending billions of dollars for VA, how is it there are actually homeless veterans, veterans that are chronically unemployed, et cetera? And the answer, in some cases, I'm not saying it's in every case, but in some cases it's because these veterans had some sort of misconduct. Maybe it was illegal drug use or just other behavior that got them kicked out of the military, and they lose their VA benefits. Now, the VA has some taken efforts in the last year to say that they are going to provide psychological care for veterans in that situation, even if they have, you know, other than an honorable discharge. But what's the obvious problem with that? Getting the word out to these veterans who may not be in a situation where they're likely to get that news. As some of our guests on prior weeks have said, an outreach is very important, getting the word out. So those are some related issues to some of these problems. Now, Rick, I know you have some information about treatment, which is very important. What can you share with us about the treatment for post-traumatic stress?
Okay. Before I do, though, David, I'd like to give out the number again if anybody would like to call in on any of these topics. It's 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. We'd really like to hear from, the veterans out there who are dealing with PTSD. And again, I'd really love to hear from some families and how the families have dealt with it, especially families who have situations where veterans have died by suicide as a result of the struggle with PTSD and any other thing that affects the family. But, they talk about, and this kills me, about getting better. What does getting better mean for different things for different people? But there are many treatment options for PTSD. For many people, these treatments can get rid of symptoms altogether. Others find that they have fewer symptoms or feel that their symptoms are less intense. Your symptoms don't have to interfere with your everyday activities, work, and relationships. David, what treatments are available?
Well, there's a number. According to the VA's research, there's two main categories of treatment. Psychotherapy is sometimes called counseling or talk therapy, and then medication. Sometimes people will combine psychotherapy and medication. And psychotherapy or counseling can involve meeting with a therapist, can also include group counseling, group therapy, and there are different types of psychotherapy that the VA uses. Cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, is the most, in the VA's view, it's the most effective treatment for PTSD, and there's different types of that. Such as cognitive therapy and then exposure therapy. One type is cognitive processing therapy, where, according to the VA, you learn skills to understand how the trauma changed your thoughts and your feelings, and then changing how you think about the trauma can change how you feel. Then another type of therapy is called prolonged exposure, where the person talks about their trauma or they write about their trauma repeatedly until the memories are no longer upsetting. That's why they call it prolonged exposure. And in the VA's view, this can help the person get more control over their thoughts and their feelings about the trauma, They also may go to the places or do things that are safe, but they've been staying away from because they reminded the person of the trauma. So, and then another type of therapy, which the first time I heard about this number of years ago now, but I thought, wow, this is really something. It's one of those things that, unless there have been research and so-called experts to convince you about it, you might find it difficult to believe. But this is called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a long term. It's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, or EMDR, which involves focusing on sounds or hand movements by the therapist while the person talks about the trauma. And supposedly this helps the person's brain kind of reprocess the memories, the traumatic memories, in a way that's healing. You know, I've known a few veterans that have used this and thought that it had some at least short-term effects. I can't tell you even anecdotally whether this long-term is effective. So, you know, Rick gave out the number before, but any veterans that want to share their experiences or any thoughts about this, give us a call, 1-888-627-6008. That's our call-in number, 1-888-627-6008.
David, Rick, and I had a situation today, as a matter of fact, and I guess I get this every day, is when I'm talking to veterans and they bring up their medication. It is amazing how much medication is being prescribed out there for our veterans to deal with PTSD. What can you tell us about this as far as from the VA's perspective? I know I can tell you a lot from the veterans' perspective. I'm sure you've done some work from the VA's perspective.
Yeah. We have, Rick, before I do that, we have a call on line four. Doug, if we can take that, Michael from Alabama on line four.
Hey, how are you guys doing this evening?
Good.
Hello, hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Mr. Hurley has been going through my records, and I just wanted to call in and say a little bit about the VA's dealings with me and my PTSD. And I've been trying to find, and I feel terrible because I cannot find it, but I've been trying to go through my records and find out what percentage I was awarded, and I think my percentage was 30% on the disability, I believe. And the short background story is Iraq 05 to 06 was my last deployment. Came back, went straight back to work as a firefighter. Some of my triggers have to do with a vehicle being on fire. And I went back to work in the fire service, and you might well imagine that that didn't help the issues out a whole lot.
Right.
But I had to continue working. And so in 2008, my wife, I had been, our marriage got on the rocks real bad. I never hit anybody, but sometimes what you say could be more damaging than what you do. And I almost lost my wife and my kids when I came back. So in 2008, she forced me to go get a little bit of treatment. At that time at the VA here in Birmingham, I was diagnosed with PTSS, which is... The individual then, she told me that it was kind of like you've gone through PTSD and now you're in a post-traumatic stress syndrome, which is not really as bad as PTSD. Most of my questions, I think I'm much like other veterans that when she asked questions, I tried to defer questions or I wasn't completely honest with her because nobody wants to feel like they're out of control. Nobody wants to feel like that they've got something wrong with them or that they're deficient in some way, shape, or form, especially not somebody in the military. So my answers weren't completely forthcoming, and even though I was being really evasive with answers, she still got the diagnosis of the PTSS. I continued through that, and about 2010, I was having enough problems between there and at work that I had to go seek help through our employee action program, the AP, where I was working at Hoover Fire Department. At that time, I was having problems with insomnia. I was still hyper alert, still having problems with sleep. pretty much everything except for the large amount of tension that was in my family. I was still having problems acclimating to being back at home, but it wasn't as bad. And so they started with not really the CPT or anything, but just basically their form of just taking you in, giving you some medications. And I stopped going there about 8 months into it because I felt like I was better. One of the things you have to understand about Hoover Fire Department, or many fire departments at any rate, is that at night they keep a person on watch. So you work 24 hours on and you're off 48 hours. But at the fire station, somebody has to stay in the day room around the door to catch people if they need help, if they come to the door, or make sure everybody gets up for an alarm. So I always volunteered to keep that watch throughout my whole time at Hoover because I couldn't sleep anyway. And so what I'd do is I'd just stay up in the day room and watch TV until 6 o'clock in the morning, time to get everybody up. And I just volunteered for it all the time. And especially when we'd run car fires and even structure fires, I would spend the next 7 days just a mess at the house.
Wow.
And almost impossible to be around. And I never related to or the insomnia or anything back to it. It's just not something that I wanted to admit I had. It's not something I was upset when I got the PTSS diagnosis. And I just wanted to feel like I was in control of myself and didn't want anybody to tell me there were things that I was not controlling. Rick knows a lot of this story. In 2014, my lung problems from my deployment finally put me out of work. I passed out on the job. So in 2014, I was going to lose my insurance in the fire service. Was forced into disability there because if you've got any breathing problems, you can't be a firefighter.
Right.
And then started pretty much 3-day-a-week visits to the VA to start working on getting a diagnosis of the problems, and found out I fit through that class of people that were having the Gulf War syndrome, which I know you guys remember back in the 1990s when guys started coming back from the first Gulf War. They were having problems.
Right.
They started telling the VA they were having problems, and the VA said,
right,
there is no such thing as Gulf War syndrome. So conveniently today, the VA has gone into calling it or trying to redirect the terminology because I think it was like in the late 90s when they finally accepted it, started kind of studying it. But they tried to turn that terminology into a chronic multisystem illness disorder or something of that effect. But it's still the same thing, and they still even say Gulf War syndrome on the VA's website. So I got sent into being diagnosed with that, and that started a series of lung problems, which have continued to get worse, and now I can't work anywhere. The point back on the PTSD diagnosis is one of my doctors, I was being looked at for sleep apnea and insomnia, and so they started having me see a social psychologist that specialized in PTSD. And through working through things with him and then my my nurse practitioner, I finally realized I did have a problem. And it even took me then to realize, or, you know, not realize it, but just admit it. I think most of us have a problem with admitting that we have a problem with anything that we can't control.
Right.
Like I said, you know, the military mindset is that I can push through anything. I just have to be strong enough mentally, and I can make anything physical go right.
Right.
And the same thing,
Michael,
is
thanks for sharing your experience, because that's an important lesson that veterans need to hear about, that military mindset, that they all know they're trained to be tough, and it's tough to acknowledge when they may have issues. So, well, thank you very much for calling. Doug, why don't we take, if she's still on the phone, why don't we take Rebecca on line 3?
Hi.
Hello, Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm here.
How you
good.
Doing?
I'm good. Are you still
are
there?
Are you still there? Yeah, are
we're
you, are
here.
You there? Oh,
hi.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Did you have some thoughts you wanted to share with us tonight?
The one thing that I have found in speaking to veterans and working with Winkler's Wish, especially with people that are still active duty, is the huge stigma that still surrounds them in any way, coming forth and trying to get help, going to any of their chain of command and saying, you know, hey, I need help, something's not right, because there is still that fear of, if they have any type of security clearance, that it's going to pull their security clearance. They're not going to be able to do their job. They're going to lose this career that they love, that they worked so hard for, and everything that they wanted is going to be gone for them doing nothing more than doing their duty that they volunteered, not drafted, to do. So while this stigma remains, we're forcing them to be quiet while they're active duty, when they could be getting the help and identified and getting the help on a regular basis, so they stay quiet and they keep it internal. And then when they get out, they find out the fight begins. The fight to get it recognized by the VA, because they didn't get it recognized while they were active duty, or in the case of my son Drew, was actually diagnosed while on active duty, and then still has the VA deny them. And it all turns into this circular fight with them, for them, where they then, as in Drew, I can only speak to Drew, and what I've been told is they start taking on almost a feeling of they've done something wrong, they're not good enough, these are benefits that they're entitled to, but they're being denied, and now it starts flowing into their civilian job. They can't go to work, they can't do their job, they can't make money, they can't take care of their family, which then compounds into even more of a sense of worthlessness and helplessness, when
right.
the place that we could start taking care of them is on active duty, but they're scared to talk about it because they're afraid of losing their career.
Right. No, that's a great point, Rebecca, and I think that's something that people need to know that, and hopefully those that are still on active duty get that message, because they need to. I think there's a lot of pressure from the chain of command, from other soldiers, other Marines, other airmen, other sailors, to not go forward, because as you said, it can be viewed as a sign of weakness, as a stigma to it, so the person isn't getting help, and then when the person starts, if you want to use the term, acting out, in other words, displaying the symptoms, and sometimes in the form of substance abuse while they're on active duty or other behavioral problems, the military is not always very good at connecting the dots and realizing there may be some very serious medical and psychological explanations for that. So that's something that veterans need to know going into the service. I think their family members need to know. They need to know resources for that. But that's a really tough problem to solve. But I think the more we raise that issue, as you have done, I think it's we'll make some progress. So thank you so much.
I agree with you. What you guys are doing is amazing. The one thing that if I could say anything to the chain of command in trying to remove the stigma, but more than anything, when you see a troop, whether enlisted or officer, that you have pointed out and put on paper that this was your go-to guy or girl, and they were a stellar troop, and they deploy or something happens, you may not know the details, but all of a sudden, they are 180 degrees a different way, and now you've got all these multiple crazy minor infractions that you look and say, wow, that's so not the way they were before. Your antenna should go up in a chain of command, whether it's a first sergeant, superintendent, commander, or whatever, to say, something's not right. Instead
Absolutely.
Of saying, they're a problem child, something's not right. So let's quit using them up and throwing them away, and let's find out what's wrong, help them fix it, help them get back the quality of life we promised them, and allow them to continue to be the asset to the military that they may still want to continue being.
Exactly. Absolutely. That's exactly the situation and exactly what the chain of command needs to be doing. And unfortunately, that's not always happening, but there needs to be greater awareness to it. And I was reading a government report that just came out in May about how the services, most of the services, are not doing a very good job when a person is being kicked out in a situation just like you described. Maybe it's a pattern of minor disciplinary infractions, and they're not doing the medical evaluations before they're kicking them out to see maybe there's traumatic brain injury, maybe there's post-traumatic stress, maybe there are other reasons. They're not doing it, or some of the services are very inconsistent. So it's an issue. I thank you very much for the work that you're doing too to bring awareness and to help other people. That's tremendous. So
thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thank
Rebecca,
you for calling.
Hey Rebecca, why don't you give your foundation a plug?
We are Winkler's Wish Foundation, set up in honor of our son Drew Winkler that we lost to PTSD suicide Memorial Day, May 30th, 2016. We are in Crestview, Florida. One of our main focuses is try and do a peer group outreach in Crestview, Florida. Our next meeting is June 24th, this month, next Saturday, in fact, on Dugan. If you go to Winkler's Wish on Facebook, those two words will get you to our foundation Facebook page, and it'll have all the Burger Burn details, and you can check us out. You can reach us via message on Winkler's Wish Foundation on Facebook. If you need anything, if we don't provide it directly, we will help get you to someone, whether in Florida or anywhere else. We've got connections all across the state. We will get you what you need, even if it's just somebody to come and knock on your door because you are at a place where you know you don't know where else to turn. We'll get you somebody.
That's awesome, Rebecca. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Rebecca, for all that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Well, I'm certainly glad we had the call from Rebecca and from Michael as well to share their insights. The awareness is very important. Go ahead, Rick.
It's just, the PTSD is a very, very serious situation with our veterans. And, I don't know, we hear about suicides and one of 22, but, there's another form of suicide associated with PTSD, and that's the alcohol and drug abuse of veterans who just are so depressed and they just continue and they get so down into a dark world that they eventually die from the abuses of alcohol and drugs. I mean, you don't need to pull the trigger or hang yourself to be a member of that class of one of 22.
And if I could add something there, Rick, that something that's overlooked perhaps are the physical side effects of post-traumatic stress. There are medical studies that you can find on the internet. You don't have to take my word for it. But the people with long-term severe PTSD can develop cardiac problems, other health problems, and the medical literature supports that. So as far as other resources, before we wrap it up for tonight, I want to give out to our listeners two very helpful websites, and one is from the Department of Defense Centers of Excellence, and here's the website. It's a long title. It's After Deployment .DCOE, which is for Defense Centers of Excellence, .mil. So again, it's a long website. It's afterdeployment.dcoe.mil. Afterdeployment.dcoe.mil. It's an excellent resource for service members, for veterans, and for their families. Another good website is for the National Center for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and its website is ptsd.va.gov. Again, that's ptsd.va.gov. So, Rick, back over to you.
Yeah, David, with regard to our troops who served in Afghanistan and Iraq, there are many stressors facing these Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom troops. It's called OEF/OIF. Service members were at risk for death or injury. They may see others killed or hurt or hurt during their deployment. They may have to kill or wound others. They are on alert around the clock. These and other factors can increase their chances of having PTSD or other mental health problems. We heard from Michael earlier tonight, and 2 weeks ago we heard from Matt about this. For many service members, being away from home for long periods of time can cause problems at home or work. These problems can add to the stress. This may be even more so for the National Guard and Reserve troops who have not expected to be away for so long. Almost half of those who have served in the current wars have been Guard or Reservists. Another cause of stress in Iraq and Afghanistan is military sexual trauma, MST. This is sexual assault or repeated threatening sexual harassment that occurs in the military. It can happen to men and women. MST can occur during peacetime training or war. David, we have several of our women veterans are suffering from MST, and we even have a couple of men, male veterans, who are suffering from MST. Research on OEF, OIF veterans suggests that 10% to 18% of OEF, OIF troops are likely to have PTSD after they return. In addition to PTSD, OEF, OIF service members are at risk for other mental health problems. Some VA research has looked at how the response to war stressors changes over time. PTSD symptoms are more likely to show up in returning OEF, OIF service members after a delay of several months. Using a brief PTSD screen, service members were assessed at their return and then again 6 months later. Service members were more likely to have a positive screen, that is, they showed more PTSD symptoms at the later time. On the other hand, many service members who screened positive had more PTSD symptoms at their return, showed fewer PTSD symptoms after 6 months. Overall, it should be noted that most returning service members screened negative for PTSD at both time points. David, what else can you tell us about the OEF and OIF service members?
Well, there's been research that indicates there are a lot of factors that may make a person more likely to develop PTSD. I'll just go over those quickly because we're about running out of time, and I want to then just wrap up quickly with our Coaching Into Care information. But the factors can include longer deployment time, more severe combat exposure, traumatic brain injury. They found that those more junior in rank, junior in age, lower level of schooling, not being married, having family problems, Guard and Reserve members, prior trauma exposure, and women, and interestingly enough, I'm not sure why, but those of Hispanic nationality, they tend to have higher rates of PTSD. That's according to the that's according to the VA. But we're about running out of time here, Rick, so why don't we tell our listeners about the VA's Coaching Into Care program, which can help
sure.
better advance the family.
We do this every week. We have discussed the Coaching Into Care. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call toll-free at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458.
And the Veterans Crisis Line, which is a 24/7 operation, Veterans Crisis Line is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255, and then press number 1. So I think it's time for us to wrap up for this evening. It's been a very quick show. We appreciate our callers, Michael from Alabama and Rebecca from Florida tonight. We'd like to thank all of you for listening. Thank our show sponsors again, American Legion's Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles Newman and Corey and Early Law Group. We'd like to thank our
We'd like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and invite listeners to become show guests. Contact us. Our contact information is on our show website, which is bbsradio.com/theveteransnewshour. And we'll be back next Monday evening. We hope to have a guest from the Vietnam Veterans of America organization. So we'll be back next Monday evening, same time, same station. That's our show for tonight. So please tune in next week for another great show. Thanks, Rick.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.